Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. And did you all see those MAGA Michigan Republicans gazing at their dear leader and look starstruck by their dear leader when he was in the state this week touting his most awesome of awesome first 100 days in office? Oh man, was it a sight to see? And it was actually sickening. I mean, they were all tripping over themselves and drooling over themselves to go see Kim Jong. I'm sorry. Not him. To see dear leader Donald Trump. Yes, the same guy who said that on day one, he would reverse inflation and make everything cheaper. On day one, he would do that. Remember that. Yes, he's also the same guy who, because he was a reality TV show star, supposedly that made him qualified to run the nation's economy despite numerous bankruptcies, including losing casinos and his corrupt college. I mean, the man couldn't even sell steaks. And this is the same guy who then took credit for the stock market's rise during the Biden years, saying that the only reason that the markets were getting better was because of his polling numbers, not because of anything that Joe Biden was doing. It was because of Trump's poll numbers. But now, this is the same guy who wrote on his social media, and I'm quoting here, he wrote this on Wednesday, April the 30th, "This is Biden's stock market, not Trump's. I didn't take over until January 20th. Tariffs will soon start kicking in, and companies are starting to move into the U.S. in record numbers." Really? "Our country will boom, but we have to get rid of the Biden overhang." Okay, so remember, when the stock market was doing well, it was all due to Trump. But when the stock market tumbles on Trump's watch, hey, it's Joe Biden's fault. What an absolute disgrace. I mean, MAGA Republicans lectured all of you for how long? Saying that the problem with America is that nobody takes responsibility for their actions. There's no personal responsibility anymore. And yet they voted for this criminal. And that's what he is, a criminal, since he had his due process and was found guilty of felonies. And yet still, this country voted for this criminal who never, ever once takes responsibility for anything that goes wrong. I mean, his tariffs have kicked in, and prices are dropping, and jobs aren't coming in, and I'm not seeing a whole lot of new manufacturing everywhere. I mean, I loved his answer here during one of those dear leader cabinet meetings where everyone showers their dear leader with such obsequiousness to make even Putin blush in embarrassment. And I do believe that's the first time I've ever said obsequiousness here on the show before.
Before, they're having tremendous difficulty because their factories are not doing business. They made $1 trillion with Biden, $1 trillion, even $1.1 trillion with Biden selling us stuff. Much of it we don't need. You know, somebody said, oh, the shelves are going to be open. Well, maybe the children will have $2 instead of $30, you know? And maybe the $2 will cost a couple of bucks more than they would normally. But we're not talking about something that we have to go out of our way. They have ships that are loaded up with stuff, much of which, not all of it, but much of which we don't need.
Now, that's a hell of a campaign slogan, don't you think? Americans, you won't be able to afford gifts for your kids for their birthdays or for this Christmas. I mean, that would have been a great slogan by dear leader. And I'm wondering why he didn't run on that winning message. Winning. He told everyone that he was going to use tariffs. He said that during the campaign. And tariffs are a regressive tax on the working class in America. But guess what? Unfortunately, not enough people heard him. You know, I'm thinking of Superman, Superman 2, actually, when a mortal Clark Kent gets beat up and then here's on the TV screen at this restaurant that he got beat up in. He learns how General Zod from his home planet of Krypton has now taken over planet Earth. And Lois Lane tries to tell him that it's not his fault. And how is he supposed to know that Zod would show up and take over the world? And a bloodied up Clark looks up and says, "They knew. I just didn't listen. They being his parents, of course, who warned him to never let go of his powers. And by the way, I'm sorry, but Christopher Reeve, still the best Superman ever, but I digress. Anyway, we knew this was going to happen. He said this was going to happen, and we knew it would bring dire consequences to this nation's economy and to this nation's working class. Unfortunately, many chose not to listen. And now, we're paying the price, all right, as the U.S. economy shrank at a 0.3% annual pace from January through March, the first drop in 3 years, according to the Associated Press. Is that making America great again? I don't know. But the AP says many economists say that Trump's massive import taxes, the erratic way that he's rolled them out, will hurt growth in the second half of the year, and that recession risks are rising. Oh, and then there's this little goodie to pull on the old heartstrings of everyone. This is from the AP. The Fed's favored inflation gauge, the personal consumption expenditures, or PCE, rose at an annual rate of 3.6%, up from 2.4% in the fourth quarter. And you got to remember, the central bank wants to see inflation at 2%. Well, isn't that wonderful news, everyone? Inflation is, wait, it's not going down on day one. It is still going up on day 101. And so maybe that's why it shouldn't be so difficult to understand why one in four Trump voters last fall are already regretting their vote, or are at least disappointed by their vote for him, one in four. However, that still means over 70% are fine with everything that he's doing, according to a Navigator research poll. Now, in early April, some 51% of Michigan residents disapproved of the job that Dear Leader was doing. 42% of Michiganders approved of him, and that's according to a marketing resource group poll. And one has to really wonder how those numbers are looking now. Again, that was back in early April here in Michigan. In early May, you have to believe that these numbers are going to be crashing in Michigan for Dear Leader, because an NPR PBS Marist poll released this week shows, and I quote, 45% said that Trump deserves the failing mark, compared to 23% who would pass him with flying colors. Maybe they were drinking too much fluoride. It's understandable, going back to that NPR story, it's understandable that partisans would have strongly polarized views of the president, but it's also notable that half of independents said that he deserves an F, and only a slim majority of Republicans would give him an A. So, from that poll, just 39% approve of Dear Leader's handling of the economy, with nearly 6 in 10 saying his tariffs will hurt America, and even more, that he shoulders the full responsibility for the state of the economy. Sorry, Dear Leader, the responsibility falls on your shoulders. The buck stops with you. But you know what, though? I'm also feeling sorry for MAGA Michigan State Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt. Now, he's running for governor, but I'm feeling sorry for him because he was slobbering all over Dear Leader's Michigan trip here this week. For instance, Nesbitt posted a pic of him getting to ride in the big boy limo car with Trump, and he tweeted, I'm quoting here, President Trump has made it clear that he wants to help Michigan succeed. Thanks to his America First agenda, opportunities are flooding back to the U.S. We are going to work with the president to take advantage of these opportunities and make sure that Michigan isn't left behind. Opportunities flooding back to the United States. We're sending international students out of the United States. Students that would help our economy. Students that would help the future of the state of Michigan. But we're sending them away because of his policies. I mean, what's this America First agenda? Because I'm sure not getting it, and neither are millions of Michiganders. Is gutting Medicaid, which Trump, Elon Musk, and the MAGA Republican Congress are currently working on, an example, Eric Nesbitt, of that America First agenda? John James, do you agree with that America First agenda, since you are in Congress and now you want to run for governor too? I mean, it seems like leaving millions to fend for themselves who desperately need help while giving Elon Musk massive tax breaks and more subsidies isn't exactly what I would call a populist movement, and it's definitely not what I would call America First. You see what game is being played here, by the way, when it comes to MAGA Republicans and Trump and Elon cutting Medicaid? You know the game here, right? They'll cut federal funding for states, since states run Medicaid. And then when states can't pay for Medicaid and have to pare back their spending, then Dear Leader and all of the Republicans in Congress will say, hey, it's not our fault. Blame the states. Not our fault at all. See, that's the shell game they're trying to play here. And Michigan Republicans, like Governor Wannabes, Eric Nesbitt, and John James, are all in. They are all for it. Here's another so-called America First example that's being celebrated by John James and Eric Nesbitt and many, many MAGA Michigan Republicans gutting AmeriCorps programs throughout the state. Now you're wondering, wait, now how is that a winning strategy? How is that an America First strategy? Well, Bridge Magazine's Jordan Hermony writes here, and I quote, Michigan is expected to lose about $15 million in grant funding for AmeriCorps projects, which range from assisting seniors to reading tutors for children as part of a larger effort by the federal government, aka Elon Musk, to slash the agency's overall budget. So you see, Musk is gutting AmeriCorps projects that are geared towards helping local communities, thanks to work by the Michigan United Way. And here's more. There's a $1.3 million cut for Advise Michigan, which, as Hermony reports in Bridge Magazine, places college graduates at high schools and communities with low college-going rates to serve as college advisors. And now let me read this paragraph if you're not too familiar with this Advise Michigan and how it plays a vital role for many across the state. Listen. Lee Fitzpatrick, Director of Communications for Alpena Public Schools, and a site supervisor of its Advise Michigan program said, the college advisor helps four high school counselors for 1,100 high school students. State data shows that 60.1% of Alpena High School's class of 2024 went to college within 6 months of graduating, compared to 53.4% statewide. So this program helped many students in Alpena. But of course, Elon and Trump are gutting that kind of funding because, hey, they've got corporate tax cuts coming down the pike. They've got to think about themselves. They can't worry about the future of the country. They can't worry about Michigan. And besides, this will, maybe in their minds, stop those kids from developing woke ideology by learning facts, figures, critical thinking skills, and real history and things like that. It's all about pleasing not only dear leader, but for John James and Eric Nesbitt and every Michigan MAGA Republican and every MAGA Republican across this land. It's about moving money out of the working class and placing it into the hands of the so-called smart, successful, elite Americans, the Americans as they see it, who should be elite, like the tech bros. MAGA Republicans view funding for kids going to college or funding to help senior citizens or people who need assistance, they see that as a waste of time, a waste of resources in our society. They see those kinds of people as a waste on our society altogether. The money needn't go to the peasants. It must funnel back up to the elite corporate donor class. Because you see, it's pleasing their corporate authoritarian donors. It's all about pleasing the oligarchy. And I feel like most people understand that word, oligarchy. And I'm sorry that Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin feels like Americans don't understand that word. Now, I think plenty of Michiganders are understanding how they're being screwed right now by the oligarchy and how it's being led by the oligarchy's figurehead, Donald Trump. I think they get that pretty easily. However, according to Politico last week, Alyssa Slotkin unveiled some kind of a Democratic Party war plan in which she says that Democrats must present some alpha energy to combat their, as she says, weak and woke image. Alpha energy. Now look, okay, on a serious level, I don't disagree with Slotkin on the weak part, and that's frankly why I applaud progressive Democrats in Michigan and around the country having the guts to give some Democrats who are in comfy districts, who refuse to fight for the people, that's why I'm all for them giving some of those Democrats a primary challenge. And I'm sorry, but I don't understand this whole mentality by some liberals and Democrats out there who say that we shouldn't be fighting each other at this time. Yes, yes, we should be fighting each other right now, because the current makeup of the Democratic Party is partially why we are in the hell that we're in. I mean, that's why I applaud someone like Democratic State Representative Donovan McKinney of Detroit running as a primary challenger to the ineffective and out-of-touch rich guy, Sri Tandahar. Now, Tandahar, you can remember, many out there, he tried to run for governor back in 2018, but he lost because why? He had no real platform except, I guess, a platform for himself. It wasn't really about helping Michiganders. It was just about enriching himself. But then he did get himself elected in Congress, and now he represents the 13th District, which I believe runs from Romulus and Wayne all the way through Detroit, up through Hamtramck and Highland Park. Now, Sri has been a complete waste. He has. And many progressive Democrats in the state legislature, all right, have already thrown their support towards McKinney. And please remember this. Thandahar has been accused of ignoring his constituents and even his fellow Democrats. And as the Detroit Free Press notes, he's been criticized for putting up billboards of himself around the district using taxpayer funding to do so. Again, it's about himself. It's not about the people of the 13th District in Michigan. So we are fighting not just against Trump and Elon and the MAGA Republican corruption, but we are fighting to ensure that we've got true fighters for the working class inside the Democratic Party. Fighting, okay? Fighting. I said fighting, and I say fighting a lot because Democrats, especially in D.C., tend to want to talk like they're taking part of some college seminar rather than engaging in real political battle or a real political rhetorical war against MAGA extremism. So, getting back to Senator Slotkin, I agree with her that Democrats must get rid of that weak image. And let's be honest, Chuck Schumer is not doing much to help shed that image. And Slotkin also said that we've got to take the American flag back from MAGA. And you know what? I'll go along with that. I will. In fact, I think we should be seeing more American flags at these indivisible rallies happening across Michigan and the nation. We progressives are the ones fighting for the working class. We progressives are the populace. We progressives are also fighting for the Constitution of the United States. We are the patriots, while MAGA Republicans are fighting for dictatorship. And they're fighting to trash our democracy and the Constitution. So I will go along with Senator Slotkin on that one. However, Slotkin's rebuke against Democrats needing to shed their woke image is again an example of Slotkin being afraid to fight against Republicans who've made it their mission to erase Black American history while obsessing over children's genitals. That's their mission. That's their main motivation. So once you give an inch to these authoritarian wannabes, all right, and their weirdness, then the battle is won, and not for the progressive side. Democrats who run scared from fighting for marginalized citizens are the very definition of weak. But Slotkin also believes that Democrats must stop using the word oligarchy because Americans, she thinks, don't know what it means. And I liked what Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders had to say in response to Slotkin's critique of his message. And I'm quoting here. He said, "I think the American people are not as dumb as Alyssa Slotkin thinks they are." No, Bernie, they are not. That's why up in Marquette, Indivisible and other progressive groups held demonstrations last weekend outside where their MAGA Republican congressman, or is it Louisiana congressman, since he spends more time at his home up there than he does in Michigan. I don't know. But anyway, Jack Bergman was in Marquette holding a fundraising event. Yeah, he won't do town halls to be with actual people. Oh, but he loves shaking the hands of elite donors. He'll never turn something like that down. But it was great to see those demonstrators outside of that event. They understand what they're up against. You see, whether it's in downtown Detroit or up in the UP, the people understand who their opponents are and who's trying to harm the working class. And Senator Slotkin, it's not that hard to explain what oligarchy means. Here you go. It's where a corrupt government works on behalf of enriching and empowering the corporate elite while hurting the working class, like Trump and Elon Musk are currently doing. You see, it's not that hard. And it's a quite effective message, as AOC is showing us. Fighting for the working class and against Trump on all sides is the real alpha move. Can Slotkin honestly say that she's done that here? I don't believe so. And I don't believe Slotkin wants people to view things as a fight between the working class and the corporate elitist, a.k.a. the oligarchy. I think Slotkin believes that being a populist party, a working class party, will hurt Democrats' advantage with corporate donors. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm not seeing much evidence on the contrary. So, Senator Slotkin, you and your people, you are completely free to contact me and say, no, you're out of line. We believe in the working class. But I say that because she's spent a lot of time criticizing AOC here in the last few months. And Slotkin and others in the party view AOC as a threat to the establishment, the old establishment of the Democratic Party. And can we please dispense with this whole notion that Alyssa Slotkin won last year because she played chess while Florida Mike Rogers played checkers? Look, Slotkin barely won that race against that buffoon and against someone who offered nothing else than being Trump's Michigan lapdog. She barely won it. And as I've noted before, while Slotkin says that democracy is in danger, she's had no issue no issue voting for a number of Dear Leader's cabinet nominees. So if democracy is on the line, and that very threat to democracy is the Trump regime, why are you voting for some of the regime's people? Mixed messages. Now, I will have more to say in my last call segment on Governor Gretchen Whitmer's appearance with Dear Leader during his visit in Michigan, and I might sound a little nuanced than I normally do, but I still don't get the overall game Whitmer's trying to play there. So I'll talk about that in my last call. But coming up here in a moment, I'm going to speak with Paula Gardner, who's the business editor over at Bridge Magazine, a fantastic non-corporate news site filled with fantastic writing and commentary on everything in Michigan politics. And Ms. Gardner is making some news that is sending reverberations across the state because she's released some articles detailing how the billions of dollars we provided in corporate handouts in Michigan aren't producing the jobs nor the economic boost we were promised they would do. And during Governor Whitmer's 6 years in office, we've given over $990 million in corporate welfare, creating a grand total of just 13,000 jobs. You see, this is a system that was designed before Whitmer came to office, and it's also a political and strange economic theory that's been used by both Michigan Republicans and Democrats, a failed theory, mind you, that corporate subsidies are an economic boon to the states and, more importantly, to the state's working class. It's a system that has to change. Paula Gardner from Bridge, Michigan is my guest, and she'll tell you of her findings while digging around to see what benefits, if any, we got in return for all of those corporate handouts. That's all coming up here in just a second. You're listening to LOL.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Well, last year around this time, I had the pleasure of talking with Bridge, Michigan's business editor, Paula Gardner, after she unveiled a bunch of eye-opening articles detailing how Michigan's corporate subsidy fund to supposedly lure businesses here to the state wasn't exactly doing everything supporters promised it would. In fact, we learned that for all of the taxpayer money that was being used for the SOAR fund, and SOAR stands for Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve, some 40% of the deals credited to SOAR ended up creating low-paying jobs. The SOAR program was once touted by both Republicans and Democrats at one time in Lansing, and it's something that Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer has championed as the best way to attract businesses here to our state. About a year later now, Ms. Gardner has provided more research into whether or not this corporate subsidy fund or corporate welfare fund, whatever you want to call it, is finally fulfilling some of the promises that told Michigan workers. Not to ruin the suspense here for some of you, but it doesn't appear to be the case. Ms. Gardner's newest piece in Bridge, Michigan on the failures of the program is gaining widespread attention from Democrats and Republicans and progressives and independents. And it's titled Whitmer's Subsidy Record. Companies get $1 billion. Jobs fall short of promises. I'd like to welcome Paula Gardner, business editor at Bridge, Michigan, back here on Left of Lansing to give some further details into her findings. So, Paula, thank you so very much for coming back with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
All right. Well, as I said there in my opening, Governor Whitmer has pushed and celebrated the SOAR Fund as a way to bring businesses here to Michigan, which would apparently create thousands of good-paying jobs. But your research is finding something different. Could you give everyone kind of just a broad overview of some of your findings, including how much money has been spent on these subsidies over the years and how many jobs have actually really been created from them?
Sure. So there are a lot of different subsidies in the state that go to businesses, you know, from roads to tax breaks to all sorts of things. But my research looked at the main job growth subsidies. So that would be SOAR, which has the two components, something called the Michigan Business Development Program and Jobs Ready Michigan. And then I went back into a little bit of history for Good Jobs for Michigan, which ended in 2019. But so the last year was during Governor Whitmer's term. So what I looked at were all of these during Governor Whitmer's term and learned that about $2.5 billion was promised to companies in exchange for jobs. And if all of those jobs had been realized, Michigan would have 65,000 more jobs. But what actually happened is not all of these deals came through. There is some potential for some of them to still come through, but many of them actually also have been canceled, or there have been no contracts actually signed, et cetera, et cetera. So what we've actually spent so far, based on the kind of delayed public information that's kind of out there, but also a little bit difficult to decipher because it's not comprehensive, we have spent about $1 billion, and the job gain has been 13,000 jobs. So that's about 0.3%. new jobs for Michigan, based on our 4 million plus jobs in the state. 3.8 of them are already private sector. And if we had gained all of those jobs, the needle would have moved about 2% on Michigan's private sector jobs.
So then I think, as you wrote, this is what, five times fewer of the number of jobs all the money was supposed to produce. Is that correct?
Yes, we have all been told. And I think it was important that I looked at the job announcements. A lot of them have been revised. That isn't the story. The story is, this is what we were told, because we're not always told about the revisions. This is the celebration. This is somebody standing on stage and saying, hey, look, we just did this wonderful thing with General Motors, and they're going to bring thousands of jobs to this state. And the actuality is far different. Different from what was actually promised. And speaking specifically to SOAR, there are no jobs yet. Everything in SOAR has been delayed. And much of it, of course, is electric vehicle related, raising further questions about whether more delays are ahead of us.
All right. So under SOAR, not one job has been created yet. All of the projects from that area haven't really been finished then. Is that what you're saying?
No, they've been delayed for years.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, but they're also, I mean, in fairness, they're also like large scale projects. They take time. They would have taken time even from the beginning. Building a factory is an enormous undertaking, but also the actual production estimates that we were all told at the beginning have been pushed back.
Most of the money that is being used to lure manufacturing to Michigan, and like you said, there were a couple of different programs, not just SOAR, but a couple others too. Is this specifically, especially from the SOAR program, is this specifically going to auto manufacturing, or is it being spread out to some different industries as well? Or is the majority of it going just to auto manufacturing?
So far, the majority is auto manufacturing. We're seeing some solar creep in there. Dow Chemical Company is a beneficiary, and there are still opportunities for those jobs to be created and reported. You know, and that's a distinction, that these companies may be hiring, but they're also not reporting the jobs to the state as jobs that will actually fulfill the terms of the agreement. So basically, for the state accounting, the job count is zero.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing I was going to ask you, you know, because if I was reading your article accurately, of the companies that report on the jobs created from all of these subsidies, the average income I think they report is around $60,000. But as you are pointing out, the problem for reporters like you and for Michiganders who want to know what's happening is that only a handful of companies actually report on these job figures and salaries per job. And I think that's where Michiganders are getting frustrated. It's this lack of transparency, and it's that lack of transparency that's frustrating lawmakers on both sides of the aisle in Lansing, too. Is that what, was I reading that all correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the pay is a good example of it. I think there's an assumption that's been encouraged among the general public and among legislators that these awards are made to companies that will increase prosperity in the state, and they are made for job creation, and that the pay has been vetted by the MEDC and the Michigan Strategic Fund. But looking at this on the other side of an agreement, there is a lack of reporting on what the pay actually is, and it also can be distorted. So sometimes a company might start with hiring managers, knowing that they'll have 20 managers hired, and they will be hiring 200 production workers down the road. So their pay looks inflated on their report to the state because the production employees haven't been hired yet. So there's a lot of fluidity in actually what these numbers mean, but so many of the companies actually haven't reported pay. And that could be an oversight. You know, that could be a lot of different things. What I believe it might be due to is that the requirement actually didn't have pay as part of the contract. And that's something that I just found out after getting a FOIA request back on one of the deals. There is no pay anywhere in the contract either. This company just had to invest money. That's all it had to do. And it doesn't have to be accountable for how many people it's hiring or at any type of pay rate.
Something would tell me, now I know that maybe you can't answer this completely, but something tells me that we wouldn't be surprised. It wasn't a mistake, for instance, that wasn't part of the overall deal, right?
Right.
Yeah. I just want to bring this up too, since we're talking about this issue. You point out too, one thing that people maybe in Michigan, why they are getting a little frustrated by this is because we're seeing how median income pay in the state continues to lag behind other states. What's the story there?
There was a chance that Michigan could have moved to 40th place or below, closer to Mississippi, in pay data. And that did not happen, but we're really on the brink of it. And again, I think there's an assumption in Michigan that all of this money is put towards our own prosperity, our shared prosperity, you know, more opportunities at better pay and just better jobs, with the hope that those jobs kind of spin off into additional jobs as those workers spend money or whatever. That's not documentable at this point. You know, I think that's hopeful. And I think that result would be a part of economic development modeling, but I don't see it on the ground from what I compiled here.
I think I brought this up the last time you were on, but I'm going to ask you again, if you don't mind, because
sure.
It's something I bring up periodically here on the podcast. And I was talking with business writer Rick Haglund from Michigan Advance last year, and I asked him if corporate subsidies were really the best way to get businesses and industries to the state. And I'll never forget his, I viewed it as a bleak, but it was an honest answer when he said, I don't know, but it's the only game in town for all the states right now. And that's the part I think many critics point out, that our current system is pitting states against each other. Like, I always have to hear how Michigan has to deal. We're battling Indiana. We're battling Ohio and Illinois. And it just always seems like the winner seems to be the one that is granted the most tax breaks or incentives and subsidies. I mean, is that a simplistic way of looking at what we're trying to do here in the state? Or is there more to it than that?
I have believed over time that it was the only game in town as well. But the deeper I get into this, I have to say that Michigan could do a better job of defining what winning is. I think there's also an assumption, you know, this stuff is filled with assumptions, that we won, we got the jobs, and boy, they're going to be great here. And the question isn't asked even for how long. Some of these companies are fulfilling the terms of these agreements within a couple of years. They get the money and there is no obligation to stay. These are not necessarily long-term jobs that we are fighting for and trying to, quote, win. And I think that's something that's also missing. There are legislators who are trying to redefine what winning would be and actually pushing for some more transparency, maybe some like a full transparency, I have to call it, because none of this information existed in a comprehensive report that I could find. Maybe it's internal, but it's not public. You know, there's no assurances that I can see that these are long-lasting gains for the state from these incentives.
So, Paula, are you saying that from your studying, we're not really seeing how these subsidies are going to help the state in the long term? Sure, some of these projects and some of these incentives may help provide a little boost to an economy for the short term. But when you're talking about the long term, there's really not much data to support that this will help the state for decades to come.
Yeah, I mean, it depends too. There's such a broad range of, like, the companies are just such a broad range out there, but so many of them are manufacturing. You know, they're getting these deals to expand for specific contracts that have a beginning and an end. You'd like to think that if General Motors is building a giant battery factory and spending a couple billion dollars of their own money, that that's not a transitory type of investment. But we've already seen that General Motors let that go. And I think we all want to see that factory provide the type of work that we have seen factories in Michigan provide forever. But, you know, these businesses operate in an industry with more and more compressed timeframes. And we just also have to hope that, you know, when we give them money, that they can keep signing the contracts and keep things going for years and years and years. And I just don't think that's a given.
You've already brought this up, but I'd like to maybe just delve into this a little more. Paula, what is the political breakdown in Lansing right now on these subsidies? Republicans, obviously, once backed corporate subsidy plans when Rick Snyder was governor, and now they are vowing to cut the SOAR program significantly. And then there are some Democrats, like State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who's also running for the U.S. Senate seat, and she wants to restructure the program to also help revitalize communities rather than just focusing on job creation. Now, I read in your story, and I'm paraphrasing here, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think I read where Governor Whitmer said, we can't do what the extreme right or left wants to do, which is get out of this game entirely. But I'm not really seeing it that way. To me, it seems like there's a debate, as always, I guess, in Lansing and in politics on how best to spend money, and that's going to continue. But at the same time, there does seem to be some kind of bipartisan agreement in Lansing that the current way, the way that we're doing these corporate subsidies, is not sustainable. Is that your reading of what's happening in Lansing right now as well?
That is my read. And I think there are a lot of opinions out there about what should be sustainable. But the people who weren't quoted in my story as commenting to me, I think are telling as well. I could not get a comment from Matt Hall, for example, and Governor Whitmer's office never answered me after four attempts. People are doing things behind the scenes that I do not know about. And I will not be surprised if negotiating for how subsidies look in the future are a big part of that. The governor has said she wants them to continue. SOAR needs to continue. They want that tool to try to attract more kind of splashy announcements, and we'll see if they create new jobs. Others want to redirect the funding to other areas. Matt Hall would like to redirect it to roads. I think the question that people are starting to ask, though, is does it work? And that may emerge as the new guidance, but I also think there are political aspects in play as well. We also might see some new subsidies down the road. The R&D tax credit was new, and some people want to bring back good jobs for Michigan.
You know, during the lame duck session in the state legislature last year, I spoke with David Dayan from the American Prospect, and he wrote a story on while all kinds of other legislation was being held up, several corporate subsidy bills, as you well know, did pass during that session, including one for data centers for Google and Microsoft to open, I think, on the western side of the state. Is that something from all of your research and reading? Is that something that we should keep an eye on here for the near future as big tech continues to become more and more powerful and influential throughout not just the country, but the world? Will we be seeing more and more pressure for data centers throughout the state?
Absolutely. It's probably already happening. But yes, absolutely. And that's where a lot of the competition is. You will find data centers close to the Indiana-Michigan border, the Illinois-Michigan border, and people want to be able to say, look, we brought Intel. Look, we brought Apple. That's flashy, right? That's very right. Flashy. But there's also demand out there and a lot of skepticism about whether the resources that they consume are worth the lower levels of hiring than we're used to from seeing something of that size.
How long do you think it will take till we understand exactly like how many jobs these data centers will create? Are we already getting some kind of data from that?
There's some national data and some people starting to pull some of that together. And I think it's worth keeping an eye on. I haven't read it recently. I remember looking at it a couple of months ago. Some of that is happening right now. I think it's important to try to find it, honestly. In fact, I'll probably look at it as soon as we hang up.
Oh, great. Very, very, very good.
Just as a reminder.
Well, listen, I appreciate you being on. If I can just ask you one more question, and it's a little bit off topic, but very important here for our state. Of course, President Trump visited Macomb County to highlight his 100 days in office here this week. But before the visit, he signed an executive order relaxing some tariffs on auto companies and suppliers. Can you just tell us exactly what happened there? And maybe if I can ask this, just one more question on top of that, you know, how does this offer any kind of stability, not just to the industry, but to the overall national economy when these tariffs can be cut or rescinded? It appears like, you know, on a whim.
Yeah. So the tariffs, you know, just to speak quickly without all the fine print for all of them, there was some modification that gives some credit, I guess, to the auto industry to be able to take a little bit more time until full tariffs take effect. There's some consideration for how much is built here versus how much is built overseas and whether an auto is finished here. So there is some movement toward easing the burden on U.S. automakers. The question about whether it's enough or what happens next, I think, is wide open. The supply chain and the auto industry is so complex, but also so important to American economy that, you know, I really hesitate to guess. My gut tells me it's probably not enough to offset a lot of the concerns that are rising, but who knows what will happen next week.
And I think that is a great place to end our discussion here today. Who knows what will happen next week? Paula Gardner, business editor at Bridge Michigan. Her article is titled Whitmer Subsidy Record: Companies Get $1 Billion, Jobs Fall Short of Promises. And she's also written a handful of stories along with that one to delve more into the numbers on what these corporate subsidies are and are not doing and how they are not fulfilling many promises that our politicians are making here in Michigan. And if you're listening around the country, I'm guessing you could say the same about your politicians in your state. So Paula Gardner, Gardner, thanks again. I'll make sure to provide links to your articles wherever people are listening so they can check out all of your work themselves. Thanks so much for taking some time out here to talk with us this week.
Great. Thank you.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
Hey, thanks again to Paula Gardner from Bridge, Michigan, for providing us with that important and albeit frustrating information regarding the wasteful spending that we Michiganders are paying for when it comes to these corporate subsidies and all of this corporate welfare. And it's why we need more government transparency here in the state and why it's idiotic that MAGA House Speaker Matt Hall refuses to pass and extend the state's Freedom of Information Act that would go towards the governor and the entire state legislature. Yet, Matt Hall shows why corruption is always part of the MAGA Republican playbook. Every progressive, every independent, and I'm guessing even some MAGA Republicans in Michigan out there are done with how big money lobbyists continue to wield power throughout Lansing, and we seem powerless to do anything about it. And that Matt Hall won't pass any kind of FOIA bill to cover the governor's office and the entire state legislature is quite telling, is it not? And it's not just for this governor. It would be for future governors as well, Democrats and Republicans. I think we are all on board with that, except Matt Hall. I mean, this revolving door in Lansing is a major problem holding Michigan back, and whoever is running for governor on the Democratic side should probably consider running against the rampant corruption in Lansing. Hey, I'm just saying. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Well, dear leader visited Michigan this week to celebrate his 100 days of abject futility and failure, but as many of us saw, there was somebody waiting to greet him at the tarmac as he was getting off the plane, and it was Governor Whitmer. Now, dear leader shook her hand and then gave her a little hug, and she gave him some quick pats on the back. I'll get back to that in a second. Now, Whitmer was there to greet him because they traveled together on their way to Selfridge Air National Guard Base in Macomb County's Harrison Township, and they were appearing together to announce how some 21 new F-15 X-Fighter jets would go to Selfridge, ensuring that it would not be closed down by the Department of Defense, and the new planes are expected to arrive in 2028. And in front of the National Guard troops at the base, Dear Leader offered Whitmer some praise for coming to talk with him about the importance of the base, which the governor's office says has around an $850 million impact on Michigan's economy. Okay, maybe Paula Gardner could someday also do some digging in those numbers. But Trump even made Whitmer give a remark or two at the event, and Whitmer did, but she didn't exactly give what Dear Leader wanted, and that was having her thank him personally. Okay, so she didn't thank him personally, but as the BBC's Anthony Zurcher wrote, she didn't have to, because the picture spoke louder than words. Now, the governor didn't attend the rally later that night when Dear Leader spoke to his call, and had she gone to that, I would have said that she had completely lost her mind. So at least she didn't go there, I guess. But look, I try to call him as I see him, and that doesn't mean all of you out there have to agree with me all of the time. That's fine. I'm trying to look at this in a nuanced way. First, I don't begrudge Whitmer for attending the event at Selfridge. She has worked to secure the future of that base. She's the governor, and she's going to be there for the troops. I have no issue with that. And I think we could all say it would have been odd for her not to have been there while MAGA Matt Hall would have just taken all the credit while giving slobbering praise to his dear leader, which he ultimately did that day. So I have no issue for Whitmer being there. What I did have an issue with is how it appears that Whitmer got really nothing in return for her disastrous Oval Office visit, where they stuck her in a corner. They made her look small, like they do with many Democrats. And I mean that in this way. Whitmer had the moral and political high ground here. She really did. Do you really believe that Dear Leader was going to personally shut down Selfridge in a state that he won two out of the last three times? You really think he was going to cut it? I mean, he's never cut military spending in any way, as we're seeing with his $1 trillion defense spending proposal, which is shocking because I thought he and Elon said that they would go after all the wasteful military spending. They were against all those wars. Trump was never going to let Selfridge close down. And that's where Whitmer should have made a deal. Look, she could have said, I'll appear with you, and I'll take the heat from my party for tacitly giving you credit for Selfridge, but I don't want my international students receiving any more threats from your regime anymore. It ends now. Now, Whitmer talks about how Selfridge provides millions in economic activity to the state. Well, so do international students who are facing threats by this regime of deportation. Yet nothing. Or she could have said, I'll do all of that stuff as long as you give us additional funding for rural broadband access across my state, or rescind your fast-tracking of that ridiculous Line 5 tunnel project, or stop attacking the millions of my citizens who are on Medicaid, or you know what, you could maybe pare back on how much you're going to cut with Head Start. But there was none of that. I mean, Whitmer is, for some reason, too busy touting bipartisanship when democracy, jobs, Medicaid, Social Security, and international students are disappearing. And I guess that's what I don't get. I mean, you want to be there for your troops in your state? Fine. But where's Whitmer's speech attacking Elon and Trump for hurting everyday, hardworking Michiganders? You see, it's not that she appeared for the troops that bother me. It's that Whitmer seems to have lost any kind of fight for what is right. And that's where the hug at the tarmac will haunt her forever. I think that's going to be worse than her hiding her face at the Oval Office. Did she have to be there to greet dear leader? No, I think she could have met him at the base. But by meeting him, she allowed him to look in charge. Again, want to be there for the troops in your state? I have no problem with Whitmer doing that. But the hugging of an adjudicated rapist and felon who's forcing international students in her state to leave through fear, that is the sickening part. Whitmer always touts herself as standing up also for women's rights and women's priorities. Yet, there she was, hugging that adjudicated rapist. I mean, yeah, for me, her inability or her decision not to fight for the people being attacked daily by this regime, well, to me, that is way beyond sickening.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Paula Gardner from Bridge, Michigan for appearing this week. Remember, you can always email me your thoughts, criticisms, or show or future guest ideas at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And you can see further commentary on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Plus, you can get videos of me with extra commentary on the YouTube. Please subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever you are listening to the show. Also, isn't it just great that MAGA Michigan Republicans in the State House are tackling the serious issues each and every day, like making Michigan recognize the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America? Huh? Yeah, well, these people have lost their minds, and it's why the people are taking to the streets. Keep pushing, keep connecting, and keep fighting, because we have to let them know a majority of us are against this kind of blatant corruption, blatant authoritarianism by the failure that is MAGA Republicanism. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.